Hello and welcome along to the RTE Rugby Podcast, and not the RTE Rugby Podcast we were expecting to bring you this week. Leinster's Investec Champions Cup hopes blown apart by Northampton Saints at the weekend. Calls of complacency, arrogant team selections, poor decision making in game. A lot to get through with Bernard Jackman and Johnny Murphy. We'll also run through a few of the big things that popped up around tomorrow's British and Irish Lions selection. And we'll run through some of the ramifications of Saturday's semi-final on that. And the URC returns this week. Munster and Ulster on Friday night is the pick of the games at Thomond Park. Only one place to start, though. Leinster 34, Northampton Saints 37. And Bernard, I think, given the amount of stuff that has come out in the fallout of the game around Leinster's team selections and decisions about not going for posts and stuff like that, it's easy to kind of to lose Northampton's role in this game and how good they were. And I suppose if there's any non-Irish audiences listening, they might get a bit annoyed that this is just going to become a bit of a piling on Leinster and a discussion around Leinster. So I think it's appropriate from the top. Let's give Northampton their dues here and talk about how they showed up at the Aviva Stadium with a plan and absolutely ambushed Leinster.
Yeah, I thought their mindset, their energy, their attacking flair, their understanding of how to take on that Leinster defence, their balls when they needed to defend, whether that was the multiple mauls, in the first half, Leinster kicked the corner a couple of times as well and got no change. And obviously the big one was the one where Leinster don't take the three and they get smashed back 4 or 5 metres and play off the back foot. Even at the end, I mean, to rip that ball in contact off Jack Conan, everything about them was, like, you'd love to be a Northampton fan. Alex Mitchell came over to us to do a post-match thing, and whatever Northampton fans were in the stadium, came and followed them and were just behind us, and they were just ecstatic. But, like, that's what you want in your team, to come into a place, to go away from home after a difficult season and just peak, and like the enjoyment they had, they obviously, like, they teamed it well, and they bought into, like, speaking to some of the Northampton guys, they kind of used Leinster's failings in the past to give them confidence. You know, they spoke about Croke Park and how if they had another 2 minutes, 3 minutes, they would have won, and then they went and followed it up with a premiership title. They have silverware to show, Leinster don't, and talked about if they get ahead of Leinster, would their minds be strong enough to battle back? And like, even if that was, like, they didn't know that was real. You know, they didn't know that was going to happen, but it did. It did. Leinster seemed to lose all composure again and manage really badly all the key moments. That and this has been similar. This isn't new. It's worse this year because they have Jordy Barrett, Orji Snyman, Rabah Slimani. They were home again. I know they've lost 4 knockout games at home, but they were home to a team who were 7th in the Premiership and who, resource-wise, Leinster dwarfed them. So, but unbelievable for Northampton. Young coaching group, and they created and executed a brilliant plan, a brilliant ambush. And you know, you hear teams say, oh, we're going to fire shots. Their big thing was they were using the Chicago Red Sox, but they're going to come over here and swing. They're going to swing. And they swung early and they got reward for it. And they never stopped swinging, even to the end. I thought their composure at the end, when they got a turnover, I noticed it's only 34 seconds, but just picture perfect, giving the referee no reason to penalise him. I also thought Leinster didn't do anything to try and magnify that, but that's Leinster's problem. Northampton were excellent, and now go to a final. Amazing for the club, great club, and amazing for them.
Johnny, on the attack they had, particularly in the first half when they just blitzed Leinster, scored 25 points in the first half, and probably should have been more if you take into account 3 missed conversions as well. Like, they should have been even further ahead. But to score 37 points in total, 5 tries against a defence that in the 2 previous rounds had not given up a point, and over pretty much all of this season, I think, coming into this game, it conceded an average of 13 points per match, 10 points per match in the Champions Cup. From a tactical point of view, from an attacking point of view, how did they pick open that lock in the first half? What were they doing that teams either haven't tried to do or haven't been able to do against Leinster this season?
I think Vesti, look, to start off, I know Vesti very well. I played with him for 5 years in Leicester. And we were slagging off air. He was the slowest rugby player I ever played with, but he was an absolute genius. You know, his communication and his scanning, playing on the wing with him was just, it was a dream, you know, because he's just his level of communication and his scanning for space early days. He is a real student of Pat Howard, who was one of the best coaches of all time, in my opinion. And they had a clear tactic that they wanted to kind of shorten their line very quickly, so get into those early spaces, and you can see that with Pollock. But a couple of their tries, their first try comes from you know, kick chase, sorry, counter. Kick, kick, and they beat Finn Smith beat Keane Healy in that space by running a short line and the vision to play that in behind. They use the blind sides incredibly well. Leinster's defensive system, when they have a ruck on the 15, is trying to shut it down if they come back blind within one pass. They really went after that. And then when they got them into the middle of the pitch, they really exposed Leinster when they had their defenders on the 15. Two of their tries come from midfield rucks, where they have guys running short balls. Pollock plays a beautiful ball out the back, and then James Lowe gets stung because they have another guy who runs a real line. They shoot same in the try in the first half, but they never played into the teeth of a blitz off an edge. So they never tried to go to width off that edge, which can be very risky. They played really good short balls on the line. It was just tactically, it was absolutely beautiful to watch from an attack perspective. And it was just a clear plan to expose that blitz, to bring the blitz onto them, to be comfortable in that, and then play around it with those short balls. You don't want to be playing long ball against Jack Nienaber, because you just get eaten up behind the game line. And then just one thing that doesn't really require a whole lot of talent was their physical edge at the breakdown. Now, the breakdown was a bit of a mess from the ref just kind of, look, jouer and away you go, do whatever you want kind of thing. But like, Leinster can't complain because they get away with that a lot themselves. And they really barred up physically in that space, and they really showed a lot of dog to go and create that quick ball that is getting, like say for Pollock's try in the first half, the quick ball off that exposes Snyman, who's laid into position. I've already spoke about the other one. If you look at their try in the second half, Joe McCarthy is laid into position and Keenan doesn't know he's there, so he shoots in two men to try and get, and that's the system, but he's inside the 15, and if you get around that in that area, it's impossible to scramble into that. Yeah, it was just thing. And Bertrand and I were actually speaking the other day. You look at the coaches' boxes, Will Webster posted something on LinkedIn, and like the same moment, I think it was a knock on by Northampton. It pans to the Leinster box, and you can see there's a level of intensity in that box. And then it pans a second later to the Northampton box, and all the lads are laughing, like they're having a giggle, even though they made a mistake. But like, I know that's a tiny microcosm of, but you could see the, and that can seep in, I know, through microphones and stuff, but that anxiety can creep in, be it at halftime or whatever. And that's something that I think Phil Dowson and his whole coaching ticket have just created there. That willingness to accept mistakes and just get on with it and keep playing. I thought that was brilliant. But yeah, I can't speak highly enough of Vesti. Like, I think he's one of the best attack coaches in the world, potentially behind Brown. But like, he's certainly up there. He's destined to, if he wants it, to get into that, you know, international bracket as an incredible attack coach.
A lot of people thought Vesti, or certainly a lot of people I speak to thought Vesti was a genuine possibility to be part of the Lions. If there was going to be a wild card coach, also it wouldn't have been that big of a risk really, because he's working with Mitchell and Finn Smith and Freeman, you know. But I think he showed he showed once again, because it's not new, how smart he is. And I just thought, I don't know, Murray, Neil, if you noticed during the week, like previous week, like all their interviews, the coaches, the players that came up, they all just were going to embrace it. They were all very natural. They were all very comfortable. You know, they already had their night out planned. They booked a place in house. They're coming to Dublin to swing during the game and then enjoy it afterwards, with no regrets. And it just felt they were all completely unified. I know it's easier if you're the massive underdogs, to have that mentality, but you have to say that Leinster at the moment are in this cycle of panicking and doubting themselves when it comes to the crunching in big knockout rugby. And unfortunately for them, it came after two brilliant performances against two shit teams. On the day, Glasgow were nowhere near where they need to be. And Quinns, obviously, you look at what they're doing in England at the moment, they're on a downward spiral. And maybe that's cost Leinster, but like that's not an excuse. Leinster need to be able to just get through each round, and be getting better towards the semi-final, final. And unfortunately, once again, I'd say Leinster played their best rugby. Maybe now they're going to pick it up again for the URC, but in Europe, some of their most more average performances have been in finals and semi-finals, and that's not taken away from what Toulouse did and La Rochelle did to them. They deserve massive credit for being able to make Leinster look average, and win those games. But definitely, if you're a Leinster fan, player, support staff, you'll have massive regrets about this happening again. And it's an unbelievable cycle. Like, it's hard to believe that a group with this much talent, haven't got a bag load of medals to show for it. And if it doesn't change, it'll be sad when they look back on their careers, because they give so much for long periods, but in knockout rugby, they just don't seem equipped to get over the line.
I do think it's interesting if you what Birch at the start of that, what you said around how much they embrace it. You listen to saw Phil Dowson's interview on RT beforehand. You know, he checks a couple of things. The learning they got from Croke Park last year, like that was a big kind of theme in that pre-match interview. And then he's like, you know, what scarred Leinster the previous week. He's like, I know it's a completely different team, but the blueprint is still the same. We've gotten a lot out of that. So like that stuff was, and I do think the Croke Park game, they got so much out of that for this one, you know, because they really went hard into that. Probably down to stuff around what the feelings were in that last moment, how they were, and that's a massive thing of coaching and your head coach and your management being able to understand what players are actually feeling inside, be it in their gut, in their mind, or what's in control there. And I think Dowson and Vesti and the whole management, they got that bang on this weekend, because they had that understanding of what that was last year in Croke Park, which was probably a more daunting task because it was a full house, you know, where they think. But yeah, you have to credit Northampton. They were incredible on the day.
One last bit on Northampton specifically I want to talk about is Henry Pollock, because you just can't not talk about him. If ever there was a day where a kind of brash 20-year-old was going to show up and have his backside handed to him, that was the day last Saturday. And 3 seconds into the game from the kickoff, I think it's Dan Sheehan and Caelan Doris absolutely level him. It was obviously like a targeted, we're kicking the ball down his channel and we're going to put him on his backside straight away. And he just kept coming back for more. And if anyone went into that weekend having any doubts about like how good this player is, or is he a little bit too cocky and stuff like that, he answered every single critic emphatically.
He's a line starting seven at the moment.
Yeah.
He's a line starting seven. People saying, oh, I think he'll travel. At the
Yeah,
moment,
like he's no longer like a, oh, I think he's got a good chance of being
no,
in
he's a
here.
start.
If
He's a start. It's up to him.
he
Anyone
isn't in
else
the
gets
squad
picked.
tomorrow, if he isn't in the squad tomorrow, it's a shock.
No, he's in the squad. He's honestly at the moment he's nailed on to be the starting seven, unless his form drops off. And even the push, the dig in the back to Josh, which is a stupid penalty, right? But you're coming into the lines then, and you're not. I actually admire him. I admire him, and I wish that we had someone like him who was just literally had coming to the quarter final, semi final, and saying, I do not give a F. I am going to do whatever it takes to win here. And the sickening thing for me is, despite all the talent Leinster have had, I'm thinking back to all those knockout games, and like last year, Jack Willis, DuPont. If you say DuPont had a massive game in the final last year, people say, yeah, but that's Antoine DuPont, right? But Jack Willis also had a 9 out of 10 game, right? Go back to the La Rochelle defeats. It was either Skelton, Aldridge, Botia. There was numerous La Rochelle players who put their hand up against Northampton. Freeman obviously had an unbelievable game. Mitchell, Kemeny, Ram and Kemeny are just cheap Southern Hemisphere recruits from Australia, not Wallabies. Brilliant recruits, but they look internationals. They look Lions if they were eligible at the weekend, compared to the fellas we hope will be Lions. So that'll be that's Leinster haven't had one or two players in any of those games who literally had 9 out of 10, 9 out of 10 out of 10. And if they have, they win, because they're all close. If they have, and that'll be frustrating, how they haven't been able to find that top level performance in a big game, not just collectively, but also individually. Just another thing about Saints, I know we don't want to go back, is it's very interesting. So they did a big review the summer last year, so the summer before they won a premiership, around where they were as a squad, what they were lacking, and they made a very brave move to basically, sorry, it's not a brave move, but it's unusual in that they said, okay, this preseason, we're not going to prioritize aerobic or anaerobic fitness. We're actually going to get bigger, stronger. So we're going to ramp up on, we're going to do gym sessions, skill sessions, and put on size. And it totally goes against the grain, because people think you have to do a huge amount of hard physical training, stamina, etc. They basically said, we're going to take a risk here. And we know we'll start slow, but that extra muscle, that extra power will stand to us as the season goes on. And I thought at the weekend, like even physically looking at them, close up, they actually were more muscular, more athletic than Leinster, and that doesn't normally happen. But again, I love the fact that they basically took a gamble as a young coaching group and said, well, what can we do differently? We're losing Courtney Laws at the end of the season. We're losing Lewis Ludman. We don't have the money. Augustus, obviously, they bought him in. They had him cheap, actually. He was another great recruit when they got him. And he had lots of muscle. Like Leinster probably had to go wide because they didn't feel they could actually bully them by playing close. So credit to them. Are they good enough to beat Bordeaux? I think the problem is you're going to have to see a different game plan again against Bordeaux, because I saw Alex Mitchell after the match was saying, off camera, he said they learned so much from Glasgow and Harlequins, because Glasgow and Harlequins tried to just play, and it played exactly into what Leinster wanted. So they knew they were going to have to kick, and kick a lot. But when they got the ball back, they needed to hit them outside of that crash zone, and hit them on the gain line, and they implemented that perfectly. But to kick a lot against Bordeaux, like it's actually, it'll be one of the work-ons for Leinster, is they're actually not a dangerous team to kick to, really. Their counter-attack isn't exceptionally dangerous. They don't have a huge amount of pace. So, but Bordeaux, if you kick to them, you could end up being under the sticks, drinking water.
Yeah, I think that final is shaping up either to be 63-60 or 6-3. It's going to be one or the other, I think. I think we've gone long enough without mentioning the words Geordie or Barrett, but I think now's the time we have to bring it in. Leo Cullen said after the game he was asked specifically about the decision not to start Geordie Barrett. I don't have regrets about that plan specifically. Should he, Johnny?
For me, I think there's a when you sit like you look at the face of it and you go, yeah, he should. But when you look at the dynamic of the bench and everything, I actually think there was a case where you were looking at Robbie Henshaw in particular and you go, okay, if Robbie doesn't start, then he's not involved, which is a massive call because of his versatility. If Robbie's on the bench and it's a 5-3 split like it was, if he comes on, then you have to move Barrett around the back line, or you put Ringrose on the wing, which he can do, but he's not a winger. My thing would be around that I think Barrett should have started, But then you either go 6-2 and you have Kieran Frawley on the bench, who can fit into the back line without too much movement around. Or you have the likes of Jamie Osborne or Jimmy O'Brien on the bench because they just fit in. Okay, they're not necessarily, you know, they're not going to be, but it doesn't manipulate your back line too much. So I think from a versatility perspective and having that 23, that's where the conversation might have been. And it would have been a big call. And pre-game, it would have been like, well, this is what everyone expected, that, you know, there's an Irish Lions player who isn't played because Jordy Barrett. So they were probably, that's something subconsciously that might have been there. I have no idea. But for me, I think the versatility on the bench, if Robbie is on the bench, is not there. I think it just moves your back line around too much in what was always going to be a game where they were going to have to score, you know, like that they were going to have, they're going to have to play to win because Northampton were always going to score points. And I think that's the bigger question for me. But again, I also think that, not starting Porter, I think, was also a big mistake. And, you know, like he's a 70, 75 minute player for Ireland. So like he's going to go, he can go 80 if you need him to. He can go, you know, he could do extra time as well. But like, I just think that they might have, I think they did get selection wrong, but I can see the Barrett one more so than a couple, than say the Healy one, for instance.
Bernard?
Yeah, so post-match after the quarterfinal, Barrett obviously had an unbelievable game, and I said to Jackie Hurley, oh, I don't think he'd start in the semi-final. But that was because I actually thought Leinster would go for the emotional safe choice of not starting him. And I think it's easier to tell Jordy Barrett, you're not starting because you're not here, like you're not here next year. But that's not the right call. The challenge I have, I think I was really disappointed, is if you look back for the last 4 or 5 years, the big selection calls, we haven't got any of the big selection calls right, I don't think, right, in general. We haven't took a gamble and it worked out. Our in-game management has been poor, and you could question the substitutions. So there's been no impact off the bench or one player to save the day, right? Because these are the things. Frawley nearly worked last year, but if you remember last year, Ross Byrne was limping around the pitch for 3 or 4 minutes in the final. They didn't want to take him off, and in fairness, then you bring on Frawley who takes two shots at goal from drop goals, which is the right thing to do. Doesn't execute them, but like Frawley for me hadn't had enough time in the 10 jersey leading into that. Like you weren't giving him the ideal opportunity. And likewise, this year we've ended up with Ross Byrne coming on for what? How many minutes did he get? Single figures. When it was obvious Sam was struggling. Like Sam had a nightmare. But yes, you don't have confidence in the guy. I know he's leaving and stuff, but he's the fellow who's been your backup to Johnny for 10 years. He's the fellow who started last year's final in Toulouse, started the year before against La Rochelle. Okay, you could argue it didn't go amazingly well, but he's your game manager, he's your goal kicker. And realistically, you know, whatever about the one that Sam didn't kick, that he went to the corner, if Ross is on for the last 20, it probably opens up other opportunities for you, you know what I mean, to take shots at goal. But you've ended up in a situation where your best player doesn't come on till middle of the second half. One of the world's best players doesn't come on, and you don't have someone you have someone on the bench that you don't trust to be able to come on for 20 minutes at 10 and win the game for you. And then you've Frawley's out of form. I agree, but I would say, well, how have you created a situation where someone who came on against Toulouse in difficult circumstances and showed bottle, right? Showed he was willing to take risks, take a shot. For South Africa, in South Africa, he had a big impact. And since then, I know he's had some injuries, but since then, there hasn't been, in my opinion, enough done to have him ready to come on at 10 if you're not going to go with Ross. So that'll be something that they will look at. Also, like minutes, like we if you look at the minutes that Northampton have played, sorry, the players who've started for Northampton have played in the last five games, the last five rounds, and Leinster, again, we're undercooked minutes wise, you know. And again, what have they like when they looked at Toulouse, La Rochelle three times, and even the Munster game. If you look at like what caused Leinster to be able to lose those games, and I'd say it's a combination of everything, but I don't think it helps. Like I sorry, I just think at halftime they're 27-15 down. Max is being quiet. You have Geordie on the bench. I actually think coach comes in there and says, "Right, lads, you know we're a bit off here. We need to change this and this tactically. Obviously, we need to fix our kick chase, whatever. But also, Geordie, Jack, you're coming on. You're coming on now." I think I immediately feel better if I'm a player because I know there's two. And to bring Jack on after 3 minutes of the second half, you actually lose the opportunity to even have a huddle as a forward pack. And
Can I jump in on this little point actually? Because you mentioned there, like, bring those guys on at halftime, but that's the opportunity to specifically Jack Conan and Geordie
yes.
Barrett. We're saying okay, so we're saying bring those guys on at halftime, make that change early, get it done. And you also say you have the opportunity there at halftime to speak to players in the changing room, get your units sorted, get the organization together, and figure out a plan. I was watching, obviously, from the stands at halftime. Jack Conan, if he was in the change rooms at halftime, Jack Conan was in the change rooms for 2-3 minutes because he was being put through his paces out on the pitch for the vast, vast majority of the halftime break. Off the top of my head, I can't remember specifically if Geordie Barrett was out there. I think he was,
He
though,
was, he was. He took a, I saw him
for a
taking a
good
goal
chunk of
kick.
that halftime break. Most of the subs were out there at halftime going through a pretty heavy workup. Going warm up. Conan came on about 4 minutes into the second half. Geordie Barrett was closer to around the 50-minute mark. Should those players have been in the changing rooms, getting the instructions, getting the opportunity to speak to people? And I mean, if they are coming on a few minutes into the second half, spend the first few minutes of the second half getting your heavy running done.
Yeah, I think so. I'm sure when Leinster look at this back, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. If Conan was going to do the, if Conan was going to miss some of the in the halftime talk, well then he'd expect him to be on from 40 rather than have another 4 minutes. You know what I mean? I don't know. I also think it's just having no one else has this model. And you have to ask the question now because it's happened so often. And Leinster never got blown away, to be fair. They never got blown away, but they keep not really managing the end game very well. So they're not taking points, right? So absolute madness. Like, it makes no sense because okay, I know we scored from one maul, right? But we've been thwarted lots of times from mauls. And we had a maul the previous side and we tried to do a shift drive and we got done for double banking. Like in the first half, we went to the corner
Remember fired up there. They were
sometimes.
really fired up at the
Yeah, so like it didn't make sense that we had an obvious area of dominance. And actually if you see that maul, see that line out, we nearly lose it. Joe McCarthy's way late on the lift to Sligman. It was a half-arsed lift, but we managed to get away with it. But we get smashed back. We get smashed back. But like that kick, I mean, as soon as the referee accepts he's going to look at the push or the late hit by Augustus on Tommy O'Brien, you have to say there's a 99% chance you're going to get a penalty there, right? So this was a really long, and then I think Tommy was getting treatment. This was an unbelievably long stop in the game. And yes, there was no message from the coaching box to the players. And like Jack Conan, looks around to see what they want to do. Like he's looking for guidance, and Frawley, who he looks to, looks up to the coaching box, and I can see this, and he's like saying, "What's the call? Or what do you want?" And by this stage, it's taken so long. I think Geordie Barrett eventually, from what I can see on the pitch, says corner, and they kick to the corner. But like, you know, it's not. This isn't about developing leadership and learning through failure and all this stuff. This is literally. You're up in the coach's box. You can see your heart rate isn't as high as the players. You then have to be able to say, get that fucking tee on. Get that tee on now, right? So there's no choice. And I always remember O'Gara saying he wouldn't have attempted half the kicks he did in his life only for Paul O'Connell made the decision for him. If it was up to him, as he actually struggled as a captain when he was captain to make those calls himself because he's going, do I want this kick? You know, whereas when O'Connell said, you're kicking this, he just went and did it. And he missed as well, whatever. There's no guarantee he was going to get it. But this is the thing. And I'm sorry, my point is this model of you bring in a Stuart Lancaster, you bring in a Jacques Nienaber, unbelievable coaches. Should they not select the team? Should they not be totally in charge of in-game substitutions, game plan adjustments? I just.
As far as your understanding, what is the breakdown of the division of labor in that Leinster coaching ticket? Like, who's picking the team, who's making calls in game, who is
I
doing the
don't
heavy
know.
lifting during the week?
I can't say with any clarity, to be honest. But
Okay.
again, even that you would think with the length of time that this organization has been together, you would know. I presume Leo picks the team. I presume Leo
Okay.
picks. You know, it's obviously Leo is very open and transparent. I'm sure everyone has a say in it. But unfortunately, like when it goes wrong, but you can obviously have a committee, whatever. But when it goes wrong, someone has to accept responsibility for it. And I think it sends the wrong message to the players. Geordie not like players aren't stupid. Like the Geordie Barrett, you know that. You sorry. The sense is, Geordie Barrett not starting here, Porter not starting here, is maybe we think we can win this without them. I think that's unfortunately. You can't. No player is ever going to admit to that, but certainly there's a danger of that. And look, to be honest, people are like Jacques Nienaber's defense is an incredible defense. They come up against an attack who had a really good plan to stop it, but what Leinster put in place on Saturday isn't Jacques Nienaber's defense. Like being lazy on kick chase isn't like we've never seen that before. So stacking up on the block, three lads hopping off Ram from that kick that leads to the pot of try. Like, and this is Max Deegan, and this is Tommy O'Brien, this is Caelan Doris, not nailing him on the spot and then putting five players on the blind side to hide and not getting your spacing right. Like, that's not Jacques Nienaber defense. That's not like the problem for me is that the players who played looked either overworked, which doesn't logically make sense because they haven't played very much. Undercooked is a challenge. And then they've often looked undercooked at this stage of the season, so maybe need to play more. And just actually kind of in a trance, like in a like spaced out, like the pressure, like the pressure's just completely got to them, and they're not even able to run. Like it's weird. So, but what I would say is, the defensive system, is a really good system. I know some people don't like it. And when Leinster implement that, they're very hard to beat. But unfortunately for Leinster, the players went completely off script. And so many errors, the Joe McCarthy, you know, the last try for Freeman, like Joe just fills into the same spot that the Keenan's in. There's no communication.
He's late into that spot though as well, Bert. Like
Yeah,
he's
late, yeah, late. But everyone was late. Everyone was late for
late.
everything.
Yeah, same with Steyman for
Yeah,
Pollockstra. He's
yeah.
late into that space. And that exposes their, one and two. And then Porter's kind of looking at the ball because that's his job. His job is nine. And then he gets kind of blindsided by Pollock into that space, but Steyman's not there. And like that was a consistent team that guys were laid into those spaces. They were tight around the 15s when they were on the middle of the pitch because their fold was slow. Like that's there's a couple of things in this. Like there's three major things: two in the contact, two in the fold. They go back blind, a number of passes off each space, and then your work at the breakdown defensively. So being an absolute nuisance and slowing the ball down. There was too many times in the game where not only was there only say one or two were off, but sometimes all three were off.
Yeah, but Johnny, I agree with you. But the thing is, this is probably the first time we've seen that happen, right? So I would say, well, what was the mindset like? What was the mindset like? What was it? But you had one team who obviously built up everything perfectly to peak, right? And then luckily for them, they came up against a team who a lot of stuff they didn't enforce on them just actually didn't implement what they do all season. So that work post-tackle, it's nearly inbuilt in Leinster. Actually, in fact, it's weird the way the last 2 weeks, so the Scarlets defeat, I was willing to brush that off because it wasn't the first choice team, but there was elements of that defensively and work rate wise and tackle commitment that now makes me wonder, like, was the whole group off for the last couple of weeks? Did they believe their own press?
Johnny, to bring it back to not going for the posts on those two penalties. I don't know what your thoughts are on both of them. I think maybe you can kind of make a concession on the second one because it was much further out towards the touchline and it was essentially the last play of the game if he was to be taking it on. But the first one, it's 15 in from the touchline, just edge of the 22. So it's a penalty you would expect a first rate kicker to be making. There's also just under 5 minutes left in the game. So even if you miss, you're getting the ball back. You have another opportunity to go. I always find it a funny idea that the brave call is to go for the corner and go for the try. There's an argument to be made that a brave call is to back yourself to level the game and go and win it in the next 3 minutes, or at the same time to go and win it in extra time. Did it seem like, is there almost an element of panic going to the corner in that situation that you feel like you have to get your try now or else it's not going to happen?
Yeah, well, you're doubling down on the pressure there on yourself that you're forcing. And if you're not within, you know, if Northampton have defended the way they have at Maltime for the majority of the Mauls, then you're doubling down again on the pressure. And for me, I think there could have been a real shift if they did get it to extra time, because Saints had done everything, you know, to get to that space. And you can, you know, at full time, you go, look, okay, we're going to reset here. We start again, and this is what we're going to do. Jordy, you know, you have the safety blanket of Jordy Barrett there. You have someone who's very experienced in that space in Ross Byrne to give him an opportunity to control the game and be very calculated in those last 10, you know, in extra time. And yeah, I think for me, and look, I've learned from experience in this at albeit a much, much lower level, but like when that's there with two or three to go, take it and back yourself to go the length then, you know, or get back into a situation where you might, you know, if you can get into a kick battle and in 3 minutes try and get a launch at halfway, that's a really good opportunity for you. And it's a really good opportunity for Leinster if they got into that kick battle and they managed to win that and even have a line out on their own 10, you know, like the big thing there is the ability with 3 minutes to go, right, the ball is going to stay in field. When the ball goes out, it's either going to be end game or we have a line out to throw in our halfway to go win it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, like Bert has already spoken about it, I think that can be led off pitch. You know, I think that can be, you know, everyone's mic'd. It's very clear. Just go do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, double downing and backing yourself to win, as you say, Neil, to win an extra time, given how the game has gone, that's probably the even braver call. Mm-hmm.
Thomas Ramos calls for that tee immediately, Bernard, does he?
Yeah.
In a Toulouse shirt.
He does. You know, and I think Ross Byrne, if Ross Byrne's on at that stage, he just takes the ball. You know, like, this, you had an unbelievable, like a nasty set of circumstances, but this happens. You need to have contingency plans for this. Your captain has gone off, right? Your 10 is having a bit of a mare. He's young. It's his first Champions Cup semi final. You haven't brought on your experienced 10. There's obviously, maybe there's confusion in the coaching box, or maybe they decided they're not going to help them. They're not going to give their opinion. I don't know. But like, and But I think if you've won four European Cups in a row, you can say, "Oh, this one's for development, lads." But I the box, right? And I know people are sick of me talking to the box, but Razzie got killed around the world for people saying, "Oh, this is nonsense, the traffic light system," right? I tell you what, Andre Pollard, Sia Khaleesi, Estevez, Peter Steph Dutoit, they didn't care. All they want to do is win. All they want to do is win. And why are you paying coaches if you're not actually going to take their input game? I don't think, look, it's pretty clear to me the way Conan looked up is that the players weren't saying, "We'll run this here." They were looking for some advice. And it didn't come in time. It didn't come in time. And maybe the advice was kick to the corner. In hindsight, it was the wrong decision. I think Toulouse, La Rochelle, even Bordeaux, and they're mad. Kick the points there. You know what I mean? Kick the points there. They just Luke who gets the ball and says, "We're kicking here." You know, it's just the basics of knockout rugby. It's the basics of knockout rugby. You're not chasing bonus points. You're not chasing points for this is literally stay in the game, stay alive, and trust your bench and trust your experience. It's just a home crowd. It's up there with one of the worst in-game decisions I've seen. And unfortunately, Jordy Barrett not starting is up there with one of the worst selection calls. And you lose by 3 points, you know. And I know people say, "Yeah, hindsight's 2020 vision." I agree and I understand.
But the penalty call isn't the hindsight thing.
No, it's
I
not.
think 95% of people in the Aviva Stadium on Saturday afternoon when that penalty was awarded are saying posts. It's
Yeah,
not a hindsight.
and Jordy Barrett isn't hindsight either, really.
Yeah.
As in, like it was a controversial. Well, I said it here in the pod. I think last that I heard,
Yeah.
heard on the grapevine that he was on the bench, and when you hear these things, it's because people are talking about it, and people are talking about it internally, you know, as a big call.
Okay. I am going to try and move it on now because we are running out of time. It's going to be a quick little URC preview this weekend, but there is a massive game on Friday night, Johnny, down in Thomond Park, Munster against Ulster. It was something we spoke about last week on the podcast. I was kind of saying it's probably the biggest Munster-Ulster meeting since the 2012 Champions Cup quarterfinal. And I know three seasons ago in 2022, I know that the pair of them met in a URC quarterfinal, but this feels so much bigger because Champions Cup qualification is potentially on the line for both of them this Friday night.
Yeah, it's massive in terms of context of the table. And it's a big game for Irish rugby to make sure that,
Yeah.
you know, one, if not both, and there'll be people, I'm sure David Humphreys will have his calculator out this weekend about what is the absolute best result to try and get both into the top eight. But it is, it's huge. And then there's a lot of emotion associated to it for Munster, and they've kind of drummed that up early this week with, you know, with Archie, Pete and Connor all moving on. You know, and same for the Ulster contingent that are leaving. So these are kind of high emotion stakes for everyone involved, and that's going to give both teams you know, a big shot in the arm, and it's how they deal with a lot of that. But yeah, this is it's absolutely huge, and it's so important for Irish rugby that, you know, there are at least two, you know, hopefully three in that, because, and Bert has alluded to it already, you look at what's been and you look at the final, the two European finals, two French, two English sides. A lot of people have been dogging the premiership out of it, but they've, you know,
They've
they've
pulled
come
their
good.
socks up.
Yeah, they've come good when it really, really mattered. And look, I think when English teams get into those knockout games, they're not going to be undercut because the premiership is a war of attrition, and you play every week, regardless of whether you're an international or not. When you're available, you play. But yeah, this is a massive Friday evening game down in Thomond Park.
Bernard, like Friday night kickoff, so I'm probably not expecting a full house just because it is difficult for people traveling from Cork to kind of come up and something like that. But with the size of the game, final Thomond Park outing for Peter O'Mahony and Conor Murray and Stephen Archer, three of Munster's greatest ever players. If they can't draw a decent crowd, and by decent crowd I mean 20,000, the guts of 20,000. If it's under that, like, the serious questions need to be asked about what's going on at Munster Rugby in general. I'm not talking about, like, why aren't the fans showing up. I'm saying why are Munster Rugby not able to draw the fans in? Because there's only so many things you can blame the IRFU for.
Yeah, I hope they get a good crowd. There's lots of stuff happening off the field in this Munster squad. And normally when that happens, they're able to galvanize and get, you know, an emotional performance. And I think Ulster probably got a better performance than maybe we expected against the Sharks, because it was such an emotional day for so many players who've been loyal servants. And you would imagine a Munster will also galvanize and play better than they did against Cardiff. But they're going to still have to fix some of the, like, it's not just emotion. Like, the line out is a non-emotional thing. The defense, obviously, you know,
elite with the line out, though, it has to be better if you're thinking they will have had Alex Codling with them for 2 weeks now.
No, 100%. So you like, there's also logic why it will be better, because they're part-time coaches now, full-time. And it's a must-win game. If Ulster hadn't have been so, like, decent for that first 60, 70 minutes against the Sharks, you'd be saying, no, this is, Munster are too good for Ulster. You know, I think over the course of the season, they have been better. The problem is the jeopardy and the risk of not winning is massive, and can they handle that? I think they will. I hope there's a huge crowd. I think the lads deserve a great send off. It would be tragic if Munster weren't in the European Cup. It's nearly unthinkable. I know it happened once, where they were very close to missing out, but they managed to do what they needed to do on the last day. But for me, it's crucial that they get in. But Ulster have nothing to lose, really. I think Ulster, it won't be the end of the world if they're in the Challenge Cup, and Richie's very good at getting his team ready for these games. So I can't wait to see this match. Yeah, it'll be a nice way of getting over, obviously, the last weekend, just getting back into some good competitive rugby.
Yeah, and Johnny, I think that's what makes it really interesting is the, like, if you look at Ulster specifically, then is obviously there's huge pressure on Munster, and ultimately Ulster are still in with a shot of reaching the Champions Cup. There's a massive reward there for them. At the same time, they are coming into this game with all of the focus on what happens if Munster lose rather than what happens if Ulster lose. They're coming in under the radar, and they have a chance to pull off a bit of an ambush like Northampton did at the weekend. Maybe it mightn't be as big of a shock, but there's an opportunity there.
Yeah, massive opportunity. A free shot. Like, you look at what Richie's trying to build, and you could argue that, you know, maybe you know, a season in the Challenge Cup where they could actually win that competition with what they're doing and the new coaching ticket and all of that. But, you know, there is that. So they have a fallback there that, well, look, we can build into this and give the URC next year in Richie's development and as they move on. But at the same time, every single player is a massive competitor and they'll want to be in the Champions Cup. But this is a complete free shot, and that makes them very, very dangerous. And they play really good rugby. You know, it's going to be a nice evening down there. Be quick track, like it's going to be an absolute cracker. But it is set up a bit like you already mentioned it. I still have nightmares about 2012, but like it is set up that, like, you know, there is, and it can be, you know, it can be manipulated by Richie that this is our chance. And it can, and you know, as Bert's already said, he's very good at that. So yeah, I think it's shaping up for a really nice Friday night, Friday night game to watch.
Yeah, and the beauty of playing on the Friday night for these teams as well is getting out ahead of the crowd, because if you look at the matches that are on this weekend, so many of them are between teams in the top four and teams from 4 to 8. You've got obviously Munster and Ulster on Friday night, but at the same time on Friday night, you've got the Sharks against Ospreys, which is, you know, Sharks pretty much locked into fourth place, Ospreys just on the outside trying to get into that top eight. Also over the weekend, you have fifth place Cardiff, who are away to the Bulls, sixth place Stormers, who are at home against the Dragons. You assume Stormers are going to win that. Seventh place Scarlets away to the Lions, so that's a tricky one for the Scarlets. 8th place Benetton home against Glasgow. That, you know, that could go either way. You might think Glasgow might edge that as well. So a win for Munster or a win for Ulster goes a massive way to to head putting them into a good place ahead of the final round. And also then as well, let's not discount Connacht against Edinburgh on Saturday night as well. I know, Bernard, that Connacht are probably out of it. They would need some wild results to kind of go in their favour, even if they get two big wins. But even if they can't qualify for the Champions Cup, they can take a few people out along the way with them.
No, they surely can. I'm just fascinated to see, again, they'll be saying goodbye to some great servants. Just, it's hard to have any faith in them. I mean, like the game against Stormers gave you hope, and then the Lions was a really poor effort. And are they able to galvanise now for Edinburgh? Based on what Edinburgh did against Munster, just that physical power that they can bring when they're switched on. The Munster game in Cork, I'm talking about. I think Edinburgh might have too much for Connacht, but definitely they could help Munster and Ulster big time.
Absolutely. I think Munster and Ulster fans will be watching that one just as keenly as the Connacht fans will. To finish up, guys, I'm going to run through a couple of quick little Lions stuff. I don't want to dwell too much on Lions because by the time some people are listening to the podcast tomorrow, the squad might be out, etc., etc. Quickly on Caelan Doris. We obviously don't know what the extent of his shoulder injury is, Johnny. It would be an enormous blow if he was to miss out, because he would be a lock to be in the squad. He's in the mix to be captain as well. You would just hope, I suppose, that he gets the opportunity to prove his fitness rather than have his tour taken out of his hands. Because you look over, like, this time 4 years ago, he was just coming in off the back of some concussion difficulties and has barely missed a game of rugby for four seasons. So it would be a horrible blow for him to miss out on a Lions tour because of an injury at this stage.
Yeah, it'd be a real killer blow for him. It probably, with the doubt, I'm not sure he could be named. Like, he was favoured to be named as captain. So, I wonder, does that probably takes that out with that doubt? Is it something that they'll probably name him anyway? Because when, you know, I think his operation,
and wait and see. Yeah, I would say, like, unless they know for certain his shoulder is in serious trouble, you'd have to think they'd bring him along and just wait and see.
Yeah, you'd imagine he'd be named in that space, and then, but I do think captaincy is probably gone for him, which would potentially look at Mara Toje or someone without any kind of other major questions maybe around that. And then it's going to be interesting to see what the fallout is from the weekend in particular. You would imagine Finn Smith after that weekend, he's nailed on probably behind Finn Russell. And then it's what that third 10, who they look at there. Do they bring someone that can play multiple positions, but can cover 10? So yeah, it's going to, that I think is probably, that's one of the main talking points around who, if they bring three 10s, or what, like, who's the third going to be? And that's one of the main talking points. And does Owen Farrell come back into the mix now as third choice if he can? You know, because he covers 12 and pick him as a 12. I don't know. It's just going to be interesting to see. There could be a bit of a left field selection in that spot.
Absolutely. I'm going to finish up. I'm going to give you a couple of quick fire questions. Short answers only. Bernard, who's your captain?
Marrow.
Johnny? Who's Lions captain?
Marrow, I think, yeah.
And then who are the out halves going? I'm not going to say three. You never know, he might bring four, but what out halves are going?
Finn Russell, Finn Smith, Owen Farrell.
I was going to say the same, yeah. I thought it was going to be pre-weekend. I'm biased, but I thought it was going to be Finn, and Sam. But I think after the weekend, I think Farrell comes back into the mix because he covers multiple positions.
Yeah, I would agree. And on Sam Prendergast, I would have been in the same camp that up until recently enough, I would have thought that he probably would and should be there. Like, you're not, like, it's, I don't think it's disrespectful to say, like, I actually think at this stage with what I've seen in the last couple of months, Bernard, like, Sam Prendergast probably is better off going on an Ireland tour this summer rather than going in with the Lions. Like, long term, there's probably more to gain from his point of view than getting to get that opportunity with Ireland this summer rather than the Lions.
Yeah, I would agree. There's a bit of a narrative, oh, that Farrell has to do bring some Irish players for development. That's nonsense. This is,
Yeah.
if he does that, I think the Lions will lose. It's kind of in the back when Clive Woodward brought so many players. There has to be an eliteness about it, and I think for Sam, unfortunately, Saturday will have done him a lot of harm, and he may not make the initial group and make a call out if there's injuries or whatever. But I think going on tour with Ireland or actually having summer just doing strength and conditioning and might actually not be a bad thing either, you know. They have to work out why his defense is so bad. Is it footwork? Is it movement? Is it strength? Is it tackle technique? The other areas of his game aren't going to
Is
develop.
it Birch? Is it his defense coach in school, I wonder?
Maybe, yeah, maybe. Could be actually. But
Yeah.
no, I think, yeah, I wouldn't like something. This is where the Irish system should be best in class, because you have so much control. So again, like I'd be saying, look at him as you should look at every player and go, what is the best course of action over the next 12 months for him? What's the best course of action for Tom Ahern? You know, these guys who we think have huge upside, and try and be a little bit more specific and individual around that, and not everybody doing the same thing. And if that means a summer of speed work, of conditioning, but it's going to long term help his career, well then so be it. But yeah, I think I thought he was going to be traveling, but I think now it'll be an unbelievably tough call for Andy Farrell to pick him. And that's elite sport, you know.
Yeah.
It's ruthless. It's ruthless, and winners are grinners, and hence we're critical this morning of Leinster because we haven't won.
Absolutely. Right, fellas, we'll leave it there. That was a brilliant podcast. Got through loads in the end. A reminder, Munster Ulster in the URC this Friday on 7 o'clock from RT2 and RT Player. Kickoff is 7:35. There'll be a live blog on rt.ie/sport and live commentary on RT Radio 1 Extra also. And then on Saturday evening, Leinster against Zebra. That's going to be live from 5:10 p.m. on the RT News Channel. So the RT News Channel and on RT Player as well. And you can listen to updates on Saturday Sport on RT Radio 1. Johnny Bernard, thanks a million as always, and we'll speak to you again next week.
Thank you.